desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, Brahma Dharma. Please repeat. After separating the different universes, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, place of appearance of the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water. Report by Srila Prabhupada. After analysis of the living entity and the supreme law of Paramatma, the independent source of all other living beings, Srila Shukadeva Goswami is now presenting the prime necessity for devotional service to the Lord, which is the only occupational business of all living entities. The supreme Lord Sri Krishna and all his plenary portions and extensions of plenary portions are non-different from one another, and thus the supreme independence is in each and every one of them. In order to prove this, Shukadeva Goswami, as promised to King Pariksit, describes herein the independence of the Purusha avatar, personality of Godhead, even in the sphere of the material creation. Such activities of the Lord are also transcendental, and therefore they are also lila, or pastimes, the absolute Lord. Such pastimes of the Lord are very conducive to the hearers for self-realization in the field of devotional service. Some may argue, why not then relish the transcendental lila of the Lord as exhibited in the land of Mathura and Vrindavan, which are sweeter than anything in the world? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur replies that the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan are meant to be relished by advanced devotees of the Lord. Neophyte devotees will misunderstand such supreme transcendental activities of the Lord, and therefore the Lord's pastime in the material sphere related to creation, maintenance, and destruction are verily relishable by the prakriti or mundane devotees of the Lord. As the yoga system, mainly based on bodily exercises, is meant for the person who is too much attached to the bodily conception of existence, similarly, the Lord's pastimes related to the creation and destruction of the material world are for those who are too materially attached. For such mundane creatures, the functions of the body and the functions of the cosmic world through physical laws in relationship with the Lord are also therefore included in understanding of the lawmaker, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The scientists explain the material functions by so many technological terms of material law, that such blind scientists forget the lawmaker. The Srimad Bhagavatam points out the lawmaker. One should not be amazed by the mechanical arrangement of the complicated engine of dynamo, but one should praise the engineer who creates such a wonderful working machine. That is the difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. Devotees are always full of praising the Lord, who directs the physical law. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.10, the direction of the Lord upon the material nature is described as follows. Vayadyakshena prakriti suyate prasharachana hekunane akunteya jagati parivartate. The material nature, full of physical laws, is one of my different energies. Therefore, it is neither independent nor blind. Because I am transcendentally all-powerful, simply by my glancing over material nature, the physical laws of nature work so wondrously. The actions and reactions of the physical laws work on that account, and thus the material world is created, maintained, and annihilated again and again. Men with a forefront of knowledge, however, become astonished by studying the physical laws, both within the construction of the individual body and within the cosmic manifestation. And foolishly they decry the existence of God, taking it for granted that the physical laws are independent without any metaphysical control. The Bhagavad Gita 9.11 replies to this foolishness in the following words. Avajananti mamuta marushim tanumashritam parambhava majanato mamabhuta maheshvara. The foolish men, muta, do not know the personality of Godhead in his eternal form of bliss and knowledge. The foolish man thinks of the transcendental body of the Lord as something like his own, and therefore he cannot think of the unlimited controlling power of the Lord, who is not visible in the acting of the physical laws. The Lord is, however, visible to the naked eyes of people in general when he descends himself by his own personal potency. Lord Krishna incarnated himself as he is and played very wonderful parts as the Lord himself, and the Bhagavad Gita concerns such wonderful actions and knowledge. Yet foolish men will not accept Lord Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Generally, they consider the infinitesimal and infinite features of the Lord, because they themselves are unable to become either the infinitesimal or the infinite. But one should know that the infinite and infinitesimal sizes of the Lord are not his highest glory. The most wonderful manifestation of the Lord's power is exhibited when the infinite Lord becomes visible to our eyes as one of us. Yet his activities are different from those of the finite beings. Lifting a mountain at the age of 7 years and marrying 16,000 wives in the prime of his youth are some of the examples of his infinite energy. But the mudhas, after seeing them or hearing about them, decry them as legendary and take the Lord as one of them. They cannot understand that the Lord Sri Krishna, although in the form of a human being by his own potency, is still the Supreme Lord with full potency as the Supreme Controller. When, however, the mudhas are given submissive oral reception to the messages of the Lord, as in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the channel of the Sipra succession, such mudhas also become devotees of the Lord by the grace of his pure devotees. And for this reason only, either in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of the Lord in the material world are delineated for the benefit of those men with the forefront of knowledge. The translation again. After separating the different universes, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the place of appearance for the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie in the created transcendental water, Garbhata. So, quite a long purport, and Srila Prabhupada covers a lot of points. So, let's see, one of the first points that he made here is that the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is completely independent, and that Shukadeva Goswami is now going to be pointing that out in connection with the creation of the material universe. So, Srila Prabhupada points out that the activities of the Lord in creating the material universe are also lila of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the material universe does not come about by some automatic process, but it's actually personally created by the different expansions of the Purusha avatars. And this is done according to their will. So they exhibit independence in this connection. So, Srila Prabhupada makes an interesting point here as to why the Bhagavatam is presenting this information concerning the creation. So, he makes the point that, well, after all, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan are far superior to these pastimes of mundane creation. They're sweeter than anything that exists anywhere. So why not simply relish these pastimes? Why bother with these descriptions of creation? And so Srila Prabhupada makes the point that the descriptions of the creation are there for the sake of the mundane devotees. So that's an interesting idea. Who are the mundane devotees? So, you don't have to answer that one. But at least for mundane people who want to appreciate these pastimes are very important, because as Srila Prabhupada points out, the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan are on a very elevated platform. Very highly advanced devotees can relish these pastimes. But if a person isn't highly advanced, then he can misunderstand the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. So, for that reason, the pastimes of the Lord in connection with the material creation are also described in great detail in the Bhagavatam. So Srila Prabhupada then goes on to make some points concerning the physical laws. So, of course, the creation means the institution of these physical laws. And, of course, in the modern day and age, a great deal of emphasis is placed on the laws of physics. And so all kinds of questions come up concerning the relation between God and the laws of physics. And people have been writing books about that subject for quite some time. So one idea that inevitably comes up is that the laws of physics act independently of the Supreme Lord. That everything is just running according to certain laws. And you may say, well, perhaps Krishna originally set up those laws and set everything into motion. But then, everything runs simply according to the laws. And so, in fact, that's not actually correct. The actual fact is that the independent action of the Supreme Lord by His will is involved in every step of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material universe. So therefore, actually the creation of this material world and its maintenance and destruction and so forth, this is part of the pastimes of the Lord. And that's good news actually for the Prakriti-bhakta, for a mundane person, because it means that actually we're surrounded by the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. We just have to become aware of what's going on around us. It's not that the pastimes of the Supreme Lord are something very much unattainable for persons on a mundane platform. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, there's so many statements in which Krishna says that I am encased in water. He compares himself with the greatest of different categories of beings, out of any different category of beings in the world, the greatest is representative of Krishna. So, the different qualities and actions of matter in the material world are there specifically because of the actions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's not something like just winding up a clock and letting it run. Of course, you can make some analogies here. If you build a clock and wind it up and let it run, it doesn't do anything very exciting. Just the hands move around at a steady pace. And that's all that it ever does. That's it. Now, consider a computer in contrast to a clock. You can build a computer and set that into motion. Push the start button, the thing boots up, and then what happens? Well, if you don't do anything more, the computer just sits there. The little cursor just blinks on the screen. That's all that happens. So then you have to enter some program into the computer. And if you do that, then the computer will execute that program. But that will also become pretty stereotyped after a while, because it will just continue executing the same program. But then if you put in more software, it'll do more things. But whatever the computer does is determined by the software that you feed into it. And we haven't yet seen a computer in which you can feed it a software package known as creativity. And then after you do that, the computer becomes creative. And you don't have to feed any more information into it. It can write novels and, you know, come up with all kinds of amazing things through its own creativity. We don't actually know of software like this. I guess maybe somebody is trying to design that. One hears about artificial intelligence. But somehow we haven't met the artificial intelligence computers yet. Actually, artificial intelligence was very popular in the early days of computers, back in the days when they were called giant electronic brain. This is the term that was used. But now the computers have become much more powerful, so that any little laptop computer you can buy for a few $100s today is much more powerful than the huge computers that they had years ago. Artificial intelligence isn't so much talked about because the whole program failed. However, people discovered they could do a lot of things with computers because by very elaborately programming a computer, you can do many complicated things according to the program, and that turns out to be very useful. So, one could say that the material universe is similar to that. Krishna is programming the material universe, and he's constantly introducing his own input. So the material universe has its metaphysical side as well as its physical side. And the things that are happening physically are due to the metaphysical elements. So this is an aspect which is very mystifying to the mundane scientists. The big emphasis that you find in science is that everything is just running according to certain laws, and the laws are basically something very simple. They like to emphasize that ultimately there's underlying simplicity to the universe, and that all the complexity came about by a kind of evolutionary process. So the idea is that you start with some simple things, and you wind up with complex things like human beings, who then figure out all about the simple things. But there's really no explanation for this. Ultimately, this explanation involves just invoking chance. For example, you start with atoms. I won't go into exactly what atoms are thought to be today in physics, but you can imagine smooth little billiard balls with pegs sticking out of them, a tinker toy type atom. So imagine you've got a lot of little balls with pegs, and you just throw them together, just sort of mash them together at random. Is it likely that they're going to come together to make a model of a windmill? You can try the experiment. I think the tinker toys and things like that are still built. And you can try it. You can put a bunch of tinker toy parts together in a big box and shake it like anything and see if you get a model of a windmill or maybe a model of the Empire State Building or something like that. The thing is, you won't. And the reason is easy enough to understand. There's nothing in the shape of those pieces that would force them to come together to make a model, say, of a windmill. There's just nothing in those shapes. Now, you can try a different experiment. You can take one of these big crossword puzzles in which the pieces only fit together in one certain way. And if you made them so they had adhesive sides or something like that, and Velcro or something of this kind, put them in a big box and shook it long enough, it could well be that the thing would all go together. Because the pieces are pre-designed so they fit in a certain way, and they can fit together by chance in various ways until they fit in the right fashion, and this can keep on going, and eventually the puzzle would come together. So you could do that. But the point is that will only work if the puzzle pieces are shaped in such a way that they go together in one particular fashion. And that means the whole thing was designed in advance by intelligence. So that's the difference between the tinker toy case and the puzzle case. In the case of the tinker toy, there's no design of the shapes of those little pieces which would cause them to go together, say, to make the model windmill. But in the case of the puzzle, there is design of the pieces, so it only goes together in one particular way to make the completed picture. So we see in the material world that so many incredible things are there in the material creation. So, but if you look at the description of atoms, let's say, in modern science, it's more like the Tinker Toy part. That's, you know, much more can be said about what they say atoms are, but basically it's a very simple little thing, and the atoms can fit together in certain simple ways, and that's the end of the story. So if you have a bunch of those parts, and they're all ramming into one another at random, you can't expect that all these different complex things that we see in the world are going to come out from that. So, but yet all these things are there. So the explanation is that behind the action of the laws of nature, there's the intelligence and the guiding control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So all these manifestations of matter are actually being controlled. So to make another analogy, it's like having clay and sculpture. Clay, you could say by nature, is simple, at least in a gross sense, it's kind of simple, because it's just sort of a smooth, sticky stuff. Okay. It's got some stickiness, and it's got viscosity, and whatever else, it has mass. And I guess that pretty much sums up the important features of clay. So, but if you have a sculptor, the sculptor can shape the clay into some statue. And the statue may have all kinds of artistic properties, so that some student of art history could write an essay about it and say, well, this sculpture is in the style of Praxiteles, the famous Greek sculpture, and so on and so forth. So, because the intelligence and the guiding power of the sculpture was there, the clay can assume this very remarkable form. So there are two things involved. There are the properties of the clay, and there's the guidance and intelligence of the sculpture. So, going to the material universe, what that corresponds to is you have the physical laws of nature, the things that you study in chemistry or physics and so on, and then you have the guiding intelligence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is manifest at every point to cause these laws to bring forth all kinds of amazing creations. And of course, creation is an ongoing thing. It's not just that the creation occurred in the beginning and that was the end of it. Of course, it's interesting, the idea of starting in the beginning and progressing to the end, interestingly enough, is pretty much a Christian idea. This is a point that, that we've been writing about lately in connection with the Forbidden Archaeology book. But basically, from Christianity, there's this concept that there's a beginning, a creation, usually it's thought to be not too long ago, and everything proceeds towards the end, which would be the second coming of Christ or something like that. So it's linear and one-dimensional. But in the Vedic system, you see that time is different. Time goes in cycles. So there are many creations, and within each cycle there are sub-cycles. And then there are sub-sub-cycles within those. And so there are small creations and annihilations within the big creations and annihilations. So creation is always going on. So that explains why it is possible also for things to come up repeatedly. This is an interesting point because you'll see in the Bhagavatam that many things repeat themselves almost precisely. And this is sometimes a bit mystifying. Of course, Krishna's pastimes repeat themselves within innumerable universes. Krishna is going continuously on a grand tour through the different universes, so that any moment his pastimes are being manifest in some particular universe, or perhaps many universes in the material world. But apart from that, even different things in the material world repeat, so that a particular personality in the material world, such as Maharaj Prithu, he would come many times, and his different pastimes would develop on many different occasions within the material world. And as a result of this, in the Puranas, you'll find different stories of the same personality, which vary, that is a story of difference in different case and different texts. And so sometimes people will say, well, this looks like a contradiction, because in this text it says that this person did this, and in another text it says that he did that. But the explanation generally given is that in different cultures, the same manifestation of different personalities and different activities occurred, but there are variations on the theme. So it's just like in music.